Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are calm, we are local, and Don Moeller, we are certainly Baltimore Positive. I know you want to give a shout-out to all of our sponsors. I'm going to let you do it because you were the one eating the Fadley's crab cake last week, not me. And you know what? I'm trying to listen to Uncle Larry and stay home and not go out much, but I must say, like, I feel bad that I haven't been over and seen Evidence State Fair and grabbed at least some chicken tenders and some waffles to go and whatnot, and Fadley's as well. I do miss getting together with you and, you know, eye to eye when we have guests like Joe Abdallah, who's about to come on from COVID3forChange.org and talking about opioids. And I know it's one thing for you, but I want to give you a little oxygen to talk about how good those crab cakes were that I missed out on, huh?
Well, the crab cakes were incredible from Fadley's. The crab soup, I also found out because my wife said, hey, you didn't get the coleslaw. And I said, well, I'm not sure they even deliver the coleslaw, but I reached out to Damie Hahn. And, of course, our friends Amy Hahn and Bill and Nancy Devine at Fadley, she said, of course, we deliver the coleslaw and the mac and cheese, Nestor. So, but great news from Fadley's, they also now can deliver curbside. So you just pull right up in front of Fadley's right down there in downtown. State Fair, our friends at State Fair with Evan and Keith do an incredible job. Full menu, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But what's really exciting now is they're jumping into this whole food supply issue, and they will pack you up an entire basket, an entire box of produce and protein, everything you need so that you don't have to risk by running to the supermarket. They'll bring it right to your car, put it in your trunk, and you've got supplies to last you for a couple of weeks. So great work at State Fair. You mentioned our friends at Moeller and Gary Realty. They're continuing to list homes, sell homes. It's amazing that people are still buying and selling during this, so give Jeff Moeller a call, 410-746-1547. And we want to thank Damien O'Doherty, Steve Carney, all of our friends at KO Public Affairs, who really helped us put together what we're calling Healthcare Week, Social Safety Net Week, really trying to tell the stories of people out there on the front lines making a difference at all the time, but really during this pandemic. And with that, we welcome Joe Abdallah, who is the executive director of Code3forChange. Joe has a great backstory and a great second part to his journey. So, Joe, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you for having me. Greatly appreciate the opportunity and happy to be here.
Well, we talked to you. You really intersect into something here because we're doing healthcare, right? So a lot of this is COVID and a lot of this is insurance and doctors and testing and politics and all of that. Your background is a long time, 30 years, as long as I've been on the radio. You were a D.C. Metropolitan Police Department police officer working in narcotics and in the FBI and DEA. And when I think of D.C. during that period of time, I thought of it as a place I didn't like going, and I'm from Baltimore, and now Baltimore has this reputation of a place that, you know, crime and murders and gangs and traffic, and I think of D.C. as this place that has really grown up and become better and safer through the very, very hard work of many, many people and the gentrification and all the things that become political issues. But when I go to D.C. now, I say to myself, there's a place that's gotten better. I go to a lot of other places and say, these places have gotten better. It's the reason, really, I birthed Baltimore Positive with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller about a year and a half ago to talk about these issues. Not thinking COVID was coming, but boy, opioids were something on the menu long before COVID. I remember talking to Al Redmer and Johnny O during the race a couple of years ago, Don, when you were the Baltimore County executive about the opioid crisis. And Don, in Baltimore County, I don't think there's any county executive, any politician, any leader, any senator, congressman that hasn't touched this issue. And Joe, you know, in your retirement from law enforcement, dare I say, the last couple years with Code 3, you really tried to get out on front of this, and because this is something that's just dragging every community down, not just city communities, right?
Absolutely. And I came from the enforcement side in my 30 years with the police department, and now I've kind of converted to the education side. And it was brought to us because we like to focus on emerging issues, of which the opioid epidemic is one. And we partnered with a local sheriff's office in Maryland, of Charles County Sheriff's Office, and they were seeing the large amount of overdoses in teens' bedrooms. And as the police officers and first responders were in these bedrooms, they were seeing signs and indicators all over the room of drug use, and then they would speak to the parents, and the parents kind of had no clue. I don't say that disparagingly of parents. I tell people that it's not their world. They're not supposed to know what a lot of these items are. So we partnered with them, and we assisted them in building a trailer, which is the mock of a teenager's bedroom. And we walk parents through, and we show them the signs and indicators of opioid misuse. Well, their trailer went so well that we decided to partner with Rally Cares. We built a trailer of our own, and I believe we've been to 20 to 25 states so far.
Wow.
And we cannot keep up with the demand for requests for the trip.
Well, this is right up Moeller's alley, right, Don? This is what you lived for as a public servant, right?
Well, I think, Nestor, you nailed it right at the beginning of this particular episode when you said there's not a community, and you're the expert, and you can really walk us through what you've seen, not only as a D.C. Narcotics cop for 28 of your 30 years, but what you see now in this new role in terms of how communities are impacted. And talk more to our listeners about this educational component, what you're trying to do, and the kind of response you're getting from folks.
It's a great question. From the enforcement side, I dealt with families, but nowhere near in the amount of time spent with them now. A big part of our trailer tour is put together by walking parents through and who had lost kids to addiction. And we asked them, what do you know now that you didn't know then? What would you pass on to other parents? And they were a big part of setting the tour up. But as far as destroying lives, I don't think there's anything more destructive than the opioid epidemic. If you talk to parents that have dealt with kids with these issues, parents that have lost their retirements, their life savings, families destroyed. And with this addiction, there always comes that, and people that have been involved in it or know family members that have, it always starts as where dad's power tools start to disappear, maybe family jewelry, loose change or cash that's laying around, items of value that start to disappear, and it just kind of snowballs to, it's a very expensive habit to keep up with. With opiates, once you begin ingesting them, your body starts to build a tolerance. So to get that same effect, you need to start ingesting more and more of the drug. So the habit becomes very expensive.
Well, Joe, I think, and Nestor, you and I have talked quite a bit about this over the years in my role in government and on the education side as well. I've obviously talked to a number of police officers over the years. And one of the things I was always struck by, Joe, was the incredible economic impact of drug addiction. And the point that police officers always made to me, and maybe you can talk about this with your background, was that you have to think in terms of street value for stolen good. I think the number they used to use to me is somewhat like 10 cents on a dollar or 15 or 20 cents on a dollar. So whatever I steal, I'm only getting 10 cents on the dollar, which means I have to really steal thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to support my habit, which then is a criminal justice issue as well as an economic issue. Is that an accurate representation from your experience, Joe?
It is 100% accurate. And what happens is, as you begin to run out of funds, a lot of users, both male and female, turn to whether it be prostitution or what we call boosting, where they'll go into retail stores, steal clothing, and then trade those or sell those for drugs on the street. But as you said, for literally a fraction of the value. So in addition to the billions of dollars that are spent illicitly purchasing drugs in this country every year, you can factor in the theft from cars, the thefts from or shoplifting from retail stores. I mean, that number is astronomical. But as you pointed out, it's worth only a fraction of its value when it's traded or sold on the street.
Now, you've taken your trailer into Baltimore County, Carver, Votek, throughout Baltimore. Give me a little background on the concept of putting all of this together from the educational perspective of really stopping it before it starts, because when I think of the opioid, you know, I think of the end result, especially in small towns, in communities, not in cities, in places where they weren't used to this outside of alcohol addiction or, things that were readily available for consumers. I would say that we see the end of this after 30 years. You see the beginning. You see the, hey, if it doesn't start, we don't have to worry about stopping it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, my experience is in a major city in Washington, D.C. With the trailer we've traveled, the two examples are Ohio and Minnesota. In Ohio, there are small towns that have been ravished by this epidemic. In Minnesota, believe it or not, in farm territory, they're ravished by this. Places where you really wouldn't really expect it. But the reception we've gotten has been overwhelmingly positive. And what the best part about that is there's a lot of parents as we're on the road who will see the advertisement for the trailer and they'll stop by and say, you know, tell us their story and then want to walk through the trailer. And a lot of times we'll walk them through, and when we'll get through, they'll say, you know what, if this was available when my child was going through it, or maybe the signs or the indicators had I known, maybe I could have saved my child's life. So in that sense, it's been very rewarding. And another part that's been gone really well with the trailer, there isn't a state we've been to where we're not touring parents, and it's usually a mom that'll see an item in the trailer that we're pointing out as a sign or an indicator. She'll get upset and leave the trailer, and we'll catch her in the parking lot, and she'll say, you know what, I've recently seen that in my son or daughter's bedroom. And Riley, well,
Joe, walk us through. Do us a favor. I'm interrupting, and I apologize, but I'm intrigued at this point. Give our listeners a virtual long-distance tour. We'll shut our eyes, and you walk us through that trailer and tell us what we're going
to do. By the way, you can find it at rallymd.org, too, if you want to do that. But it, warning signs, all of that's here. But go ahead.
Walk us through the trailer. What do we see?
So we start with a closet. When we walk into the trailer, we do an introduction to the parents. When we go through signs, you may see the physical signs, where one of the parents report one of the biggest signs they saw a change in their child was a change in their social setting and the friends they were hanging out with. And then we go through physical signs, which are these super enhanced state of relaxation, sedation. And then we start in the closet. Closets are great hiding spots for both drug users and drug dealers. I tell parents, get into every pocket you can. There's so many void spaces in a closet, whether it be pants pockets, shirt pockets, jacket pockets, in the shoes. In the tongue of the shoes, get your hand deep and inside that shoe as deep as you can. It's a great hiding spot. Also, if the sole of the shoe is loose and not glued down, lift it up. Another great hiding spot. Here's a really important point. What we concentrate a lot on is packaging, because what the parents told us is, you know, drugs are hidden. So you have to go through in the room and go through all these spaces and looking in closets and underneath beds. But the packaging for illicit drugs, when it's done, it's discarded as trash. And just to give you a couple quick examples, one that's very familiar and common to Baltimore, empty gelatin capsules. I don't know if you guys are familiar with what I'm talking about. They're like a tan-colored capsule. You can buy them at GNC, and they're empty. And what a lot of weightlifters or people that are fitness fanatics will put their protein powders in these little capsules and take them to work so they don't have to take a big tub of protein with them. Well, what's very common is parents begin to see these little empty capsules laying around their child's bedroom and in the trash can. The key indicator is they're made there to dissolve in the stomach. You place your powders in and you take them and they dissolve in your stomach. What happens is, and in Baltimore, it's very common packaging material for heroin sold on the street for $5 to $10. So if you're starting to see these halves of these empty gelatin capsules, red flag indicator. And if I can give you one more real quick, are you guys familiar with a stamp bag?
Not
What's
at all.
Called?
Stamp okay. bag.
So yeah. What it is, if you picture a sandwich bag, if I can picture a sandwich bag in your head, they're about 7 inches by 7 inches, and they have that zip top. A stamp bag is a fraction of that size, maybe about a quarter inch by a quarter inch, about as big as your pinky nail. And it's the same premise, it zips at the top. Another very common packaging method. Well, what happens is, when the powder is removed from that little Ziploc, it's not opened neatly. That top of that Ziploc is torn off with the teeth, or it's ripped off the top, and it's discarded. I cannot tell you how many moms and you're talking about it, almost looks like a piece of thread. If you don't know what it's looking for or what you're looking for, it looks like a piece of indiscriminate trash. But I cannot tell you how many parents told us every day they found those in their kids' bedroom, on the trash can, on the floor, in their vacuum cleaner canisters, in their washers, and in their dryers. And it's things they saw all the time, which they thought was just indiscriminate trash, which was red flag indicators.
We got Joe Abdallah on here. He is from Code 3, and he's executive director there, talking all things, not just from a narcotics perspective and a background as a D.C. Metropolitan Police officer for three decades, but the last couple of years of turning that into education. Raleigh, Maryland, R-A-L-I-M-D. That's R-A-L-I-M-D.org. Their mission supporting community programs and solutions, learning how you can address the opioid crisis from home. The COVID thing, Joe, you talk about these small towns and communities, and you mentioned Minnesota, Ohio, wherever. My condo is a small town right now. No one comes in, no one goes out, no one's allowed to come, you know, within 6 feet of me. And the COVID thing's changed everything for alcohol at home, drugs at home, prescription drugs at home. There's nobody there to know, especially people that are very isolated. We've talked to people, and so much of our health study this week hasn't just been COVID or insurance issues, but more just isolation and mental health and where we are right now, that this is a very, very it can be a destructive time if your personality has led you to that, and time, you know, idle time's not good for you. The last 6 or 7 weeks, a guy that's done this forever, you know, from Cop Street up all your life, you're a little worried about what we're going to come out of this with on the other end of people being isolated and having too much time, and maybe in some cases a little bit too much money to be able to experiment with no one around, right?
Absolutely. I think it's a genuine concern in the sense that a lot of drug misuse is triggers. You know, there's different triggers, whether they're social or economic. And we don't have to go through all the economic triggers that could be pushing someone back to the use of drugs or to the use, with all the unemployment, with people not knowing how they're going to pay their mortgage or their car payment or how they're even going to pay for food. So a lot of that stress and tension turns into triggers which directs people towards drug use. So I think it's very concerning time, but I think there's a lot of unknowns to see how we're going to come out of this at this point.
Joe, how does the – it's probably a tough question, and I have no clue what you're going to say, so it's always interesting to ask a question. We have no clue what the answer might be. How does the mental health community and the drug abuse counseling community, how do they react to your work? Are they supportive, or are they somewhat reluctant to embrace what you're doing?
So far, I can tell you they've been 100% supportive. And we're usually, every state we go to, we're partnered with prevention, treatment specialists, mental health specialists. And, you know, we spend time with them talking, and they could not be more happy with the platform and the outreach. And also, we also walk a lot of them through the tour itself, and, you know, it changes state by state depending on if there's different variances or what they're seeing in their particular state. So they've actually assisted us when we're in different states, as whether it be updating or changing the tour to fit the specific needs of the communities that we're in. But so far, it's been 100% positive, and I can't tell you the number of requests we get from states, whether it be high schools, churches, community groups, to the point where we've now built a second trail. We have one for the East Coast and one on the West Coast. Unfortunately for right now, they're both shut down with the COVID-19 epidemic.
No,
go ahead, Ned.
Yeah, when we have police officers on, as certainly someone who's been doing it as long as you have, we talk about our issues in Baltimore. And really the reason we put this thing together a year and a half ago was talk about the election and who the next leadership's going to be and the mayor. Policing in our city, when you talk about trust and the community and cops and citizens, as I see here on the front of Code3ForChange.org, and clearly we have issues in Baltimore. We need to solve some of them. Anything in your three decades of experience you would say we're doing on the right path, or other things we could be doing here in the city to make our city better from a policing and a trust standpoint?
I think getting policemen out into the community and interacting with citizens is the best way to start that. And I can't tell you how many people, and our motto at Code 3 is caring for cops in the communities they serve. And besides the opioid trailers, we are 100% an outreach organization, and we're all retired policemen. But you would be surprised at the number of residents in local communities don't know the first name of one police officer that patrols their neighborhood. You'd be surprised at that no interactions take place whatsoever. So what we try and do is get out into the communities, bring policemen with us, and we support all community events. If I can give a quick example, we have a program called Project Hope, and it's where we bring policemen into elementary schools. And we do it once a week. We meet with about 30 to 50 kids. We play games. We take field trips. The policemen are mentors for the kids. They're educators. And I can tell you that it's changing communities here, because not only have the kids excel in the program, but the parent advocates in the school, the teachers, the counselors, and the parents. So we've kind of brought all that full circle. And it's worked very, very well in communities in D.C. and Virginia where we have the program. And if I can say quickly, you know, we take field trips as well. We go to Sky Zone. We go bowling. We go to Nationals baseball game. When we take these trips, we have about 6 to 8 uniformed officers with us and maybe 30 kids. You would be shocked when people see us in bowling alleys, the people that come over and like, hey, what is something wrong? And we're like, no, this is, and we explain the program. People then want to say, can we donate? Can we buy a game of bowling for the kids? If we're at a restaurant with these kids, again, people say, hey, is there a problem? When we explain what we're doing, people want to help support the meal or leave a tip or do something for the kids. I mean, people embrace it. So it's been very successful for us here. And besides Project Hope, we support all National Night Out, Stop the Violence Nights. We're very involved with the police department, bringing them together with the community.
That's such a Baltimore positive story. And as we continue here on Baltimore Positive with Health Week, Social Safety Net Week, Joe, folks, our listeners that listen all the time know that one of the things that Nestor and I love to do is to really get the personal story of the folks we chat with. And one of the things, as you're talking, I'm sure our listeners are saying, my gosh, we have a guy that was a narcotics cop for 28 years in D.C., a police officer for 30. Tell us about your journey. What makes a guy who leaves the police department after 30 years dealing with some of the toughest criminals out there say, I'm going to go to the other side, I'm going to make a difference, I'm going to jump from the enforcement side to the prevention side? Tell us about your journey and how you ended up making that decision.
You know what? I was a young policeman, and it was kind of like, this is a really a strange association, but like the dog, the bounty hunter. I watched that program with my daughter when she was a kid, and he said, you know, when he was young, it was always about kill the shark, kill the shark. And as you grew older, it was save the shark. And I say that because as a young policeman, it was about arresting people and you know, being an aggressive officer. And that doesn't mean physically, but just being aggressive, patrol out on the streets and doing the job. The last part of my career, protect and serve is what we do. Protect was the first part of my career. Serve was the last half. Even in narcotics, you know, I ran into a lot of people, a lot of families. And whether it be through the court system, you can give back and helping families, help guys change and get out of that work into a position or a situation where they're gainfully employed, paying their rent, paying car insurance legitimately, and changing people's lives. And I took that from the police department into the realm that I'm in now. And believe it or not, I still have relationships with guys whose lives I helped change while I was a policeman. I still talk to them, you know, once a week, once a month now, keeping updated, you know, with what they're doing and living right. So I feel I can do that on a bigger level here at Code 3, and then get officers who are like-minded. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of officers that don't come from the inner city, that come from small-town USA, but there's a lot of young officers that come to D.C. with the mindset, and I'm telling you because I personally met them, that they want to get to know the community that they're serving. They want to make a difference. I mean, I know there's a lot of bad publicity out of Baltimore for as far as the police department, but there's good guys and girls there. I mean, there's good and there's bad, and I tell people that all the time. But if you just get the right group of guys together and get them in a neighborhood to start interacting with people, genuinely interacting, you know, not phony, and you can even in D.C. neighborhoods. There's, when we speak with residents, there's a lot of times they'll come up to me, especially elderly residents, and say, hey, you think you could talk to your police friends when they come by and maybe just wave? Just wave and smile. And you don't realize, it sounds pretty trivial as we speak about it, but it's a really big deal to people. It could change the relationship in a block if you just rode through and smiled, or get out and talk to the kids, get out and throw a football. I mean, that stuff is, it's reality, and it makes a difference.
Joe, you know, founding Baltimore Positive was brought on by me traveling a couple years ago to other cities, and I'm 50, I'll be 52 this year, and I've been traveling most of my life, obviously not the last 6 or 7 weeks, but going to these places and seeing cities that do improve, I want to give you a little oxygen, because we're Baltimore Positive, we don't like D.C. much around here, you know, the world champion Nationals and the Redskins and all that, but it is a place when I go, I'm like, wow, this is a place that's a lot better than it was when I was 18, going down to the 930 Club and going into the city and, you know, worrying about every part of it. And now Baltimore has that perception, and I'm always thinking, all right, let's get ahead of this. Where are we going to be in 10 years, 12 years, 15 years? How can we make that turn? Well, you know, you were a cop on the street in D.C. in the Marion Barry era, you know, first and second time from what I remember, right? So seeing it improve and seeing it get better when you now take these youngsters born in this century who have no association to that, and maybe they're in a challenged part of D.C., but by and large, I think anybody that spent more time in D.C. now who's our age remembers when it was more like that. We're trying to pick Baltimore up. What about what you saw on the streets all those years really has made D.C. a place that I'm sure you're proud of having served, right?
Absolutely. And I was proud to be a part of that transition. You know, we had we were the murder capital of the world back in the late to mid-80s when the crack epidemic hit here.
And you fixed it.
Yeah, and it's not just through a police department. It wasn't through the court systems or the judicial system. It was, you know, the mayor's bringing in, you know, businesses, getting commitments from restaurants and builders and developers to come in and change parts of the city. And again, not all of that's well. I get that. But it brought about a positive change. And again, when you can employ people, if you can get those businesses and places to come to the city, I think it makes a difference. And I think D.C., and I'm not judging Baltimore, but D.C. for the most part is a pretty friendly police department. We haven't had a major incidences in a long time like we had back in, you know, 2015 with Baltimore and Ferguson, Missouri. You know, we haven't had those types of incidents. And again, stress to you, not that we're any better. We've just been very fortunate. But I think that D.C. was a great place to work. I've worked for some great chiefs. The chief now is very involved in what we do, as well as all of his district commanders.
By the way, what's a great chief? Tell me what a great chief is.
I think a great chief is one who supports his officers when they're right, one who is in the daily view of the public, not someone that's behind a desk or a figure that people don't know. Chief Newsham, who's the current chief, I've seen him at functions, neighborhood functions that he comes out to. He is in the public eye. When he gets there, he stays there. A lot of people want their picture taken with the chief. It's cool. But he stays there. He talks with citizens. He doesn't show up, you know, with an escort and then, you know, say hi to the officers and then leave immediately. He interacts with the community. And I go back to that again. People appreciate that because it's genuine. And if he's the top guy and he does it, I think it makes everything a lot easier for everybody. I think it, and again, guys that have a genuine passion for the job, but, you know, the community is 50% of that. They have to trust you. They have to believe you that you're doing the right thing.
Joe Abdallah, you know, joining us here. I want to reset from rallymd.org as well as code34change.org and changing lives. Go ahead, Don.
No, I was just going to say, Joe, you work for male chiefs. One of the things I know, D.C. had an outstanding female chief. We have an outstanding female chief now in Baltimore County. So one of the exciting things has been to watch both the diversity of the police departments across the country, both in terms of gender and race, and really breaking new ground, and as you said, making connections with community. So good things are happening out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, with D.C., I can think of two district commanders that are females. I'm one of the deputy chiefs that's a female, and she was born and raised, I believe, in D.C. So, I mean, you'd be surprised, and I'm telling you, you know, there's a lot of bad police stories out there that we see, but there's also daily, if you just look at the things that the guys and the girls that are doing on police departments throughout the country. There's a lot of people that have a passion for making the areas and the cities or the counties they work a better place. They really are.
Well, you've made our little place a better place here at Baltimore Positive. Any sort of parting shot for Code 3 and driving your truck? And obviously, the COVID thing has disallowed a lot of different things and probably has taken away parts of what you do there. There will be another side of this, but in the meantime, between now and then, with all you're doing with the opioid education, I'm going to send everybody up to see your work at code3forchange.org, as well as the vehicle at Rally. That's RALIMD. .org as well. But I want to make sure we put a framework on this for anybody that just came into the conversation to let them know where they can find you, Joe.
Sure. So our website for Code 3 Association is code3forchange.org, and you can go there and see the outreach kind of details of what we do. And I will say that before this started, there was the Be More Healthy Expo in Baltimore at the Convention Center. It was in early March. We had our trailer there, and we were supposed to meet one of the deputy chiefs from the Baltimore Police Department there, but things didn't get quite worked out. But we are trying to, through faith-based organizations and the police department in Baltimore, to start one of our Project Hopes there. And we're really looking forward to getting that started. So hopefully when this is all over, we'll be more on a local level with you guys, and I can see you in person.
Project Hope, that sounds like something we can get online with, right?
So maybe we can connect you. We have one of our good friends, Reverend Al Hathaway, in Baltimore, who's a good friend of the show, been on several times, is in charge of a group, a volunteer group that's growing leaps and bounds called Act Now Baltimore. So maybe we can connect you with them down the road as well. Really appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. And here's the thing I will tell you about our organization. We're not a one and done, and a lot of the schools and the programs you work with have a fear because organizations come in, they do one and done, they take pictures with the kids, and they leave. And it's one of the things we've been committed to. We don't leave any of the programs they're at. We don't tell the communities what they need either. We come in and say, how can we help address the needs, and we go from there. So that's one of the reasons we've been really successful. Lastly, the virtual platform for the trailer, if your guests go to RallyMD, and that's R-A-L-I, RallyMD.org, in the top, there is an icon for Rally Cares. If you click on that, it will direct you to the homepage with the virtual trailer, and you can click on the different icons through the trailer. It will give you some are videos, some are still pictures with explanations of the items that you are seeing.
Really appreciate it. You've been a great education on the opioid. It's a pandemic as well, to some degree, in our country before the other pandemic came about. We're going to send everybody up to code34change.org. Joe, thanks for coming on and sharing your journey with us. We appreciate you, man.
Greatly appreciate the time. Thank you guys very much, and hopefully I'll get to see you in Baltimore.
Appreciate you, as well as former County Executive Don Moeller joining us here on behalf of Baltimore Positive. I want to send a shout-out to our friends at State Fair, as well as our friends at Fadley's, holding together the crab cakes downtown for carryout, and Don's been ordering them up. I got to get over and get some mac and cheese with my my gloves on and my mask. I've cleaned up for the camera around here, so Evan Brown's not going to recognize me. I'm going to be all straightened up when I go over to State Fair in Catonsville for some chicken and waffles, maybe some shrimp and grits to go. I should go for breakfast one day. I've been hankering State Fair for shrimp and grits and stuff in the morning, but I got to get over there for some chicken and waffles as well. State Fair and our friends at Moeller and Gary Realty, Jeff Moeller, getting deals done out on the web. You can find them at Moeller and Gary Realty, the virtual real estate agents, as well as we're all virtually putting this thing together, as is Don and I. We hope to get this pandemic tamped down a little bit. Keep everybody safe. Wash your hands out there, whatever you're doing, and make sure you are quarantining, and make sure you keep your mask on and keeping your area nice and safe so we can keep you around. Appreciate you subscribing to Baltimore Positive, as well as listening to WNST.net, AM 1570 in Towson and Baltimore. Keeping calm, staying local, and always staying Baltimore Positive.